This is the Rational Reminder Podcast, a weekly reality check on sensible investing and financial decision-making for Canadians. We are hosted by me, Benjamin Felix, and Cameron Passmore.
And this is episode 18 of the podcast. And as people may have noticed, we've changed the format a bit, including, you hear over top of us, some snappy new music.
Yep, we got some new music.
In this week's show, so we interviewed a longtime client and a good friend of ours, Mark Sutcliffe. So if you're from the Ottawa area, for sure you know Mark. He's been our voice on local talk radio.
And if you don't know Mark, like if you're not from Ottawa, you may not know who he is, but he's not just a media personality. He's extremely involved in the community. He's a successful business person. He's involved in a lot of philanthropic efforts that he's been very successful with. So he's, I mean, by all accounts and from all angles, a fascinating person to learn from and to listen to.
Yeah, and it all started, it must be a dozen or so years ago. I just reached out to him. I was a listener of local talk radio at the time. And I would hear Mark on the air and think, you know, I think he's a reasonably nice, balanced, sensible guy. And I just reached out by email. And we ended up meeting up and hitting it off. And he was at a point in his life, and he talks about it in the podcast, where he was looking for the kind of solution that we believed in as far as investments go. So it was just a great match in the get-go. And then as we got to know each other, he ended up helping us on our marketing and advertising side.
Now, we do have 10 copies that Mark signed of his most recent book, The Long Road to Boston, which is the story of his journey from being a non-runner to actually running in the Boston Marathon. So we are going to give away 10 copies, and I guess we'll mail them to people. If you post a review on the show, on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast, and then send us an email letting us know you did that with, I guess, your address. bfelix@pwlcapital.com is my email address, and we will mail you a copy of Mark's book.
Anyways, it was a really interesting interview. I think you'd agree.
Well, I mean, Mark's an absolute professional from the perspective of talking on radio. That is actually his profession. So he was good.
It was kind of weird to be on this side of the mic, as we talked about, because he's interviewed us many times on the air. So it was kind of fun to get to ask him questions.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll go ahead and start our interview with Mark. Here we are with the 18th episode of the Rational Reminder Podcast. Today, we are very fortunate to welcome Mark Sutcliffe to the show. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's kind of weird to be on this side of the microphone, though, with you, I must say.
Well, it's weird for me, too. I'm used to asking the questions, and I'm rarely in the position of answering them. So there you go.
Well, you're in the hot seat today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mark, we've been working together on marketing initiatives for PWL for quite a few years now, and we've done lots of interviews together.
Yeah.
But as Cameron said, this is the first time that we are actually interviewing you, so it should be kind of fun. You've got a long history in all forms of media. You also run businesses. You're an author, and you're very involved in philanthropy, and I'm sure I'm missing something. How would you describe yourself, and what motivates you?
What motivates me? I mean, I guess I like getting things done. I think I have a compulsion towards ticking boxes and solving problems and that kind of thing. I think when I see something that's not being done properly, I want to fix it. That's probably my greatest motivation. So I like doing a lot of different things. As you mentioned, I'm involved in a bunch of different things. And so I like the challenge of getting a lot of different things done and having a busy week and getting to the end of it and feeling like I accomplished a lot. It can be a big workload sometimes. It can be a juggling act, and it starts over every week, but I enjoy all the things I do. I love doing radio broadcasting. I love writing. I love being involved in businesses. I love helping other companies. So I enjoy it all. It's lots of fun. And I get as much out of it, if not more, than I put into it.
I'm super curious on this, because you appear to be a man of efficiency, because you do have so many balls in the air all the time. And the radio show is no joke, of course. You have to be prepared for this show every day. How do you do it? Like, what does a typical day look like?
So typically, I get up at probably 5:30 in the morning, and most days I would go for a run at that time. If I have a chance to run later in the day and I can sleep in till 6, then I will take that. But most days I have meetings all afternoon or other work that I have to get done, so I run early in the morning. And then I get to the radio station at about 7 o'clock every morning and start preparing for the radio show, which starts at 9. And the show is from 9 to 1, and then from 1 o'clock on, I work on other things. My consulting practice with my partner, Patrick Whalen, Sutcliffe and Whalen, we help other businesses grow. We help them with their strategic planning, their budgeting, coaching, a little bit of that kind of stuff. And I'm involved in other activities as well. And then I pick up my kids at school at around 4:30 or 5 o'clock and hang out with them and my wife in the evening. And I'm usually in bed by about 9 o'clock. That's usually...
And how many kilometers are you running a typical week now?
So I would say I'm running probably about 70 kilometers a week. Yeah, that'd be a normal week distance for me. I run almost every single day. And I usually run 8 to 10K on weekdays. And then I do a longer run of 20 to 25K on the weekends.
Impressive.
Yeah. But I would say one of the things about the way my life is structured is that, which I like, is that it kind of enforces a ruthless kind of efficiency on everything. And I don't, you know, I try not to be efficient when it comes to people, but I try to be efficient when it comes to everything else. And so I hate waste of any kind. I hate wasting time, money, food, anything like that. So I try to be really efficient with my schedule and not waste any time at all. That's my strategy, my
approach.
That
actually ties in really, really well to one of the questions that I want to ask you. I remember a while ago when we were doing something on the radio, you told us about how you were investing your money prior to discovering PWL. And you kind of told us about the different phases that you went through. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess originally I had a lot of money just in GICs and I was risk averse, very risk averse. My parents are both risk averse when it comes to investing and frankly, a lot of things in life. So they were only interested in investments that would have a guaranteed return. So that was my philosophy for a while. And then I started thinking I've got lots of runway ahead of me. I was, you know, still in my 20s and 30s and I was a business owner and I was learning more about the capital markets and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, I should be getting more of a return. I knew other people who were investing in the markets and getting a better return. And so I started to invest directly in certain stocks. You know, I thought the telecom sector was going to do well and the technology sector. So I handpicked some stocks. I think I was invested in Nokia for a time and that kind of thing. But it never really made sense to me that I would have some ability to pick stocks that would go beyond the capacity of everybody else I was competing with in the international investment marketplace. And I realized that it was a competition and that, you know, I never understood why. Well, if Nokia is going to do well, and that means their stock's going to go up by a whole lot and I'm going to make a whole lot of money, why isn't everybody buying that stock, right? Why aren't we? And so there must be people who don't think it's going to do well. And why are they wrong and I'm right? And what information do I have that means that I can be right sitting here in Ottawa, Canada, being a part-time amateur investor who spends maybe half an hour a week on this stuff? So it never really made sense to me. And that's why when Cameron and I first met and we talked about all this stuff, it really resonated with me that there was a better way to do things and that the systems that a lot of us followed as investors, handpicking stocks or having somebody handpick stocks for us, just didn't make sense.
So really, we connected at the right time where your thinking was at the time. So it's not that I back then changed your mind. It just seemed to make sense to you, really. And since then, I mean,
and I didn't know there was another way, right? That's the thing is that what clicked with me is not just what you were saying, but the fact that there actually is something that makes sense that is a choice for me, right? Because I thought it was, you know, it doesn't really make sense, but this is the game you got to play. And it isn't.
And so many people we meet have had that epiphany already that this makes sense. We have very terrible luck in trying to change people's minds on investing. Most people just have to get there on their own, which is what you did. And we hit it off since then. And since that point, which has to be a dozen or so years ago, I'm guessing, I mean, you've been the voice of our brand in Ottawa, you know, on radio advertising, as well as emceeing seminars and whatnot. And you've learned a ton about our industry and our business. How do you look at our industry and how do you look at us in our industry?
So I've learned a lot about the industry, and I think what I have come to realize is, look, there are lots of good people working in the investment industry, But if the industry is structured in a way that the incentives that are offered to them put them at cross purposes with their clients at times, then you know how that's going to play out, right? That's inevitable. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It means if you pay people commissions on things, they're going to sell those things in any industry, whether it's the investment industry or any other business. So if you set up the industry where the objective for the people working in the industry is to sell, 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 then they're going to sell, sell, sell. If you reward them that way, that's what they're going to do. So one of the big problems I have with a lot of the way the industry works is that it is structured to reward people for selling products, to turn their clients' portfolios over and over again and earn commissions, that they're rewarded to sell certain products but not others, that there aren't requirements to put the client's best interests first. So I think what really resonated with me about your approach and why I think PWL Capital stands out in the industry, along with a small number of other boutique investment firms, is that I pay you and you get paid by me to look after my best interests and my portfolio. You don't get paid by the investment companies, you don't get paid by the mutual funds. So that aligns our interests. I'm a big believer. My partner in the Ottawa Business Journal, Mike Curran, will tell you, I talk about this all the time. You have to align your interests. This is one of my favorite things to say in business. Whoever you're working with, you got to make sure your interests are aligned. And if they're not aligned, then there are going to be conflicts and you're not going to get the outcomes you want. So our interests are aligned. Mine as a client and yours as the service provider, because we both want the same things. And it's not just that we want the same things, we'll both be rewarded the same way and fairly if those things happen. So that's a big part of what I believe in. And the second half of it is what we touched on already, that I just don't accept the idea that a stockbroker in Ottawa, Canada, can have some specialized knowledge or information or expertise that allows him or her to pick individual stocks in a way that will outperform the giant institutional investors on Wall Street, in London, in Hong Kong, in Tokyo, that there's some guy in Ottawa who's going to have, you know, I can go to him and he's only going to share that information with me and a small number of other people, even though we could all get rich by this information. He's only going to share it with me as one of his hand-selected clients. I just don't buy that for a second. And the evidence that you guys have shown me bears that out.
Yeah. You end up relying on luck, right?
Yeah. And who wants that for their investment portfolio?
Yeah, exactly. It's actually one of the things we wanted to talk to you about as well. You delivered a TED Talk on the role of luck in life. So we were actually hoping that you could, well, maybe tell us a little bit about how you ended up doing a TED Talk. And then also maybe just talk a little bit about the idea of the importance of luck.
Yeah, I've reflected for a long time on the role of luck in my life. And I'm somebody, you know, I work hard and I think I'm good at the things I do. But I've come to realize that that isn't the greatest factor in my success in life. The simple fact is I was born in Ottawa, Canada, at a time of peace and prosperity and a time of great opportunity. I had loving parents who supported me. So, you know, that's probably 95 to 98% of, you know, the opportunity to be successful in life. And that's like being born on third base, you know, and I know I didn't hit a triple to get there. I was dropped onto third base to start my life. And so, yes, it matters that I work hard and yes, it matters that I'm good at things, but ultimately there are tons of people in the world who have much, much less than I do, who work just as hard as I do, if not harder, and who have incredible talents. But they weren't born in Ottawa, Canada. And, you know, I'm not even getting into the issues of gender and race that go along with that as well. So I'm incredibly lucky and I'm determined to both acknowledge that and to act on that knowledge. So I've gotten involved recently in a number of different initiatives, including some to help vulnerable newcomers to Ottawa, particularly refugees who come to this community and who are trying to make their way in Canada, but they need help finding jobs and finding other opportunities. And there are all kinds of things working against them in the system. So all of this kind of informed this theme that I was working on. And I had the opportunity to deliver a TEDx talk at TEDx Canada earlier this year. And I wanted to illustrate that. So I used running as a metaphor for that and how in a huge marathon, we all have you know, you run the New York City Marathon or the Chicago Marathon, as I did recently, and you have this timing chip that they put on your shoe. So you all line up, 50,000 of you will line up at the start of this race. And if you're starting right at the start line or you're starting way back, it doesn't matter because they figure out when you cross the start line and they time your race that way. So it's from start to finish, not from, you know, way back in the race to the finish line. So that levels the playing field and makes it fair for everybody. Life isn't like that. If you're, you know, if you're a woman, you start farther back. If you're a visible minority, you start farther back. If you were born in a third world country, you start farther back. And there isn't that chip that levels the playing field. So that was the theme of the talk. And I've gotten lots of great feedback about it. And it seems to have struck a chord with a lot of people. And again, I'm determined to try to fix some of the things in our world, in our society, even in a country as equal or as focused on equality and diversity and multiculturalism as Canada, there are still huge systemic barriers that we need to address.
Yeah, amazing. The TED Talk was a phenomenal TED Talk. Really interesting.
Thank you.
I've known you a long time. And yes, you're lucky. I think we're all lucky in many ways. And you talked about being efficient, but I've known you also to be extremely regimented. I mean, we traveled, our families traveled together once, which was a great time.
We ran a half marathon together at Disney World.
The Disney half marathon. Yeah. So I learned there that you're very regimented for sure. I mean, you had us right down to every kilometer was a certain time, so we didn't go too fast because you wanted to finish exactly on 2 hours, which even for me that at the time was a relatively relaxed pace. And it was a great time, even though we had to get up at what, 3:30 in the morning
That's
to
right.
get to the
yeah.
start of the race. But I think about all the marathons you've run, you've done must be several dozen marathons now, right?
Yeah, 30 now.
30 now, yeah. Which takes extreme, you know, regimented lifestyle combined with the rest of your life that's going on. And I want to link this with kind of the planning exercise that we went through, you know, recently, your long-term financial planning exercise with us, which is also a regimented, systematic approach to planning. Can you talk about how you felt about that process and how it linked to how you plan things in your own life?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I would start by saying, and I've said this before, there isn't really anything important in my life that doesn't have a related Excel spreadsheet associated with it. So I am very data oriented and I am very planning oriented and goal oriented. So I keep track of just about everything in my life. So as an example, I was concerned about a year ago that I wasn't getting enough sleep. And, you know, sleep is really important to your health, especially as you get older. I also can notice the difference in my effectiveness when I have not gotten enough sleep. So I want to get more sleep. So there are lots of ways you can try to get more sleep, going to bed earlier, sleeping in later, whatever. But to me, I can't do it unless I'm keeping track of how much sleep I'm actually getting. So I track how much sleep I get. I track what time I go to bed, what time I get up, and I keep a rolling average of how much sleep I've gotten recently. And if it starts to slip below a certain threshold, then I have to do something about it. And you can't act and you can't respond unless you have information, or at least I can't, unless you have information to act on, unless you know what you're doing. It's the same way with food. I don't want to gain any weight. I'm not trying to lose weight, but I don't want to gain any weight. So I keep track of what I eat. I count calories and I make sure that I'm not exceeding a certain amount on average over a period of time. And so likewise, I think with anything in life, you have to be conscious of what your goals are and what it will take to achieve those goals. So what I liked about the financial planning process that you took me through is that it was very comprehensive and detailed. You took into account a lot of different variables. You ran it all through this incredibly sophisticated software, and we were allowed to tweak some of those variables and see how different things turned out. So my income, my projected income going forward, how much money we've got saved up, what it's invested in, what returns it's likely to generate, my wife's income, her pension, how long we expect to live, all these different elements. And we were able to run different models and then see if by and large, you know, on average, within a different range of performance and life expectancy and returns, it would it all work out. And thankfully, because I'm lucky enough to have been successful in life and because I've saved a bit of money, it looks like it's going to work out if we keep working hard and there's no catastrophic event. So that's very encouraging and very, you know, it helps me sleep at night to know that we've got a plan and that it's on the right track. The other thing I would say is, you know, I compare a lot of this stuff to marathon running because in my TEDx talk, I quote Bill Gates saying that most people overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year and underestimate what they can accomplish in 10 years. Most people try to do too much or think they're going to do too much, learn a new language, lose 80 pounds, whatever, go from not running to running a marathon in 1 year. To me, life is very much an incremental activity. You're always trying to get better. Those increments add up over time, but you can easily get discouraged if they don't add up quickly. But if you're patient, they add up over time. And I think your planning process shows that. You can go from not being a runner to running a marathon and running lots of marathons, as I did. I was not a runner. I was not athletic as a kid. And now look at me. And you can go from not being in a great financial position to being in an excellent financial position over a period of time, as long as you're prepared to be patient. There's no get-rich-quick scenarios. There's no shortcuts in life, I don't believe. I think it is all about increments. And you may expect a lot at the front end and be disappointed, but you probably should think of it more in terms of 5, 10, 20 years, because those increments add up over time. And if you're patient, you'll get there.
So we've had in the last couple of weeks some fairly substantial market volatility. Do you think having that big picture view helps you deal with that as an investor?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, you know, I write down every day what I'm eating, how much I've exercised, how far I've run, how much sleep I've gotten, and a lot of other things about my day-to-day life. I do not keep track of my investment portfolio like that. You know, I entrust it to the plan that we've put together that you guys have helped me with, and I'm playing the long game with that, not the short-term game. So I'm not looking every day to see, again, when I was invested in Nokia and a couple of other companies, I was checking their results every day. You know, did they go up? Did they go down? I have no idea what the markets did on Friday or last Monday or 3 weeks ago. I right now, as I'm sitting here as a guy who covers the news and follows business and owns a business and has a significant investment portfolio, I can't even tell you whether the markets are up or down over the course of this year. I have a sense that probably generally they're up. Maybe there's been some volatility recently. I don't know. I'm not keeping track of it that way. I'm keeping track of it very much on a long-term basis. And we sit down and review on a regular basis and, you know, on an annual basis maybe. And if things are on the right track, great. If they're not, we'll adjust. But I leave that to you, and I'm not worrying about the numbers in this case.
That's probably the right way to look at it, if there is one. I think in general, the financial media makes it hard for investors to do that. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Do you think that'll ever change as more and more people take a long-term view like you and maybe have a plan in place? Do you think the media will ever stop reporting on the day-to-day volatility in the market and things like that? Or is it too attractive?
Yeah, I think it's too easy for them to cover business the way they cover sports. You know, there's numbers involved, and it's easy to just sort of say, you know, and it's the same, frankly, with the way they cover politics, right? So, we're all guilty of it in the media. I'm not separating myself from that. You go for the low-hanging fruit, and you go for the things that have changed since the last time the person tuned in, and you center in on the incremental things rather than the big picture things that are actually really more important. So I think that's inevitable, unfortunately. I think my advice to people is ignore the ups and downs, the volatility of financial news reporting, and look at the bigger picture things, the longer term trends and the evidence. But it's always going to be a thing where, you know, oh, the markets are down 300 points today, you know, which is such, I mean, 300 points is not what, today is not what 300 points was 10 years ago either. So it sounds like a big number, but it's not. But even if the market's down 2% in one day, so what? You know, what's the overarching trend? What's the long-term direction that it's going in?
I got a question for you about Ottawa. It's well known you love this town. It's your hometown, and you're often a big proponent of Ottawa in every event you go to. And in 1995, you founded the Ottawa Business Journal. And since then, you've seen huge changes in this city. You lived through, you know, the changes at the Ottawa Citizen with the newsprint changes. You lived through changes at Bell Media. You had the front row seat, you know, watching the tech crisis of, you know, JDS and Nortel and whatnot. And now you've seen, I think, a revival happen, you know, led, many would say, by our good friends at Shopify. How do you view the Ottawa business scene now?
I think it's very exciting. And I think the city has grown up a great deal in the last, certainly in my lifetime. You know, I remember when I was a kid, we happened to be downtown one day and my dad took me to the site where the Rideau Center and the Convention Center and the Westin Hotel now stand. And they were sort of digging the foundation for that. And when I think about all the things that have happened since then, like, you know, the Canadian Tire Center, we're no longer skipped over for big concert tours anymore. We've got a National Hockey League franchise in Ottawa. We have football again. We have professional soccer. You know, we have Blues Fest, the Jazz Festival. There are all these things to do in Ottawa that were not there when I was a kid. I often joke about how, you know, my friend and I would just take a bus downtown and go to McDonald's and walk around in downtown Ottawa. You know, there wasn't as much to do. There wasn't live music. There weren't the same entertainment options. So I think Ottawa has grown up a lot. It's a lot more of a big city. We're about to get a new level of transportation infrastructure in our city. That's all very exciting. But I think the flourishing of the private sector is probably the biggest thing that has changed in our city in the last 30 or 40 years. Once upon a time, we were only a government town. And I think the federal government still has a huge presence in Ottawa. There's still a lot of federal public servants. I'm married to one, and that is a huge part of our economy. And that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing for Ottawa. It's a lot of stability and security. But what I see is really exciting is this generation of people taking risks, like the folks at Shopify and many of the other young and exciting companies in our city. There's a whole generation of 20-something and 30-something entrepreneurs that are doing remarkable things, and they see Ottawa in a much different light, and they're growing up in a different Ottawa from the one I grew up in. Mm-hmm. So there's huge potential for that, and I think the best is yet to come in terms of Ottawa's private sector activity and growth. There's some really exciting things are going to happen in the next few years.
You've been the voice of PWL in Ottawa for quite a few years now on the radio and other venues. Do people ever talk to you about PWL or about investing based on your association with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, the first thing I get is long live your money. Yeah. Right? So people repeat that back to me all the time. I think that's hilarious. It's great that that's resonating with people. I think that, you know, what we talked about earlier in terms of there's got to be a better way, and the logic or the lack of logic of investing by picking individual stocks, I think that resonates with a lot of people. The messages that we deliver around making sure your investment advisor works for you and not for the big financial institutions, I think that resonates with people. And so, yeah, this is an area where everybody has questions. It's not something they think about all the time. You know, it can be a seasonal thing. Sometimes it's RRSP season. Sometimes it's because some circumstances have changed in their life or their relationship with their advisor has changed. But I do have a lot of people sort of asking me, well, what should I do? And I point out to them that I'm not an expert on any of this. I'm not, you know, you can't be. If you've got a full-time job and a family, you can't be an expert on investing. And I'm not an expert on medicine. I'm not an expert on law. And that's why when I have an issue in one of those areas, I go see a doctor or a lawyer. And so I think it's really important to have a financial advisor in your life. And I think it's really important for that to be an independent person who works for you and not the investment companies. And that's what I tell people to do is don't take my advice on investing. Take my advice on how to approach your investing and how to trust it to the experts who are going to work for you and have your best interests at heart.
It's a great way to think about it. And we do know that the ads are resonating with people because people are contacting us after hearing you talk about the messaging that you're mentioning just now. How do you feel about being part of the, I guess, movement toward index investing in Canada?
I'm actually very proud of the fact that I've been involved in this. I'm glad that Cameron and I met so many years ago and I got to be exposed to this at an early stage in my investing career and at a time when I could become a bit of an advocate for this and an evangelist for this because I see the trend in the United States, and you guys have quoted some of the data of how more and more investors are moving towards index investing and seeing the logic and the scientific evidence behind that. And I hope more and more people do it in Canada. This is not a zero-sum game like so many other things in the investment world are, where you probably do want to keep it a secret if you've got some knowledge that some stock is going to take off. Well, you don't want everybody else betting on that stock with you. Whereas index investing is something that everybody can benefit from. And so I'm happy to be able to spread the word about that. And so it's not just the investment philosophy, it's also the relationship with your advisor that I think is crucial to that. It's the two things. You want to have the right investment strategy, and you want something that is not based on fallacies and flawed logic. But you also want a relationship with somebody who is going to work with you and you can trust, and who has, you know, whose interests are aligned with yours and has your best interests at heart. And I think those two things are what's changing about the investment world in Canada for the better.
My last question for you, and as I think about last week's podcast, we had Dan Solon on, who you know.
Yeah, I love Dan.
And Dan's a great and very interesting individual who I've known as well for probably about the same amount of time as I've known you.
And who would be mad at all of us for not wearing ties right now.
Perhaps, but we are in the Solon room, so.
That's true.
He's happy. Yeah. I think he'd be happy about that. But I look at both of your lives, and this is a question I asked Dan last week. Like, it appears to me that your life, much like Dan's, you've been on this epic journey, is the words I used last week, this epic journey of helping others, helping tell the story of Ottawa. You've done a lot of volunteer work, but you've been a very driven, inspirational person to a lot of people. Is that what it kind of feels like to you as you look back on your life and what you're doing? Are you in a place of, you know, some people call it flow, where you're kind of in this zone now, where you kind of know what you like doing, you're getting old enough, you figured a lot of stuff out?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit of that. Look, my life is wonderful. I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be luckier. It could not be going better in so many different ways. I have a wonderful family. I have a great relationship with my wife and my mom and my in-laws and my extended family, which is at the heart of everything, of course. All of my professional opportunities are fun and rewarding, and I get to have impact. And so, you know, I'm playing with house money in every right. sense of the word, you know. So life has exceeded my expectations. I was a very shy kid who, you know, was worried about a lot of things when I was a teenager, and everything has worked out way beyond my expectations. But life is also a work in progress at all times. You get to a place and you always think, okay, what's next and what more can I do? And so you're always setting your sights on the next objective and the next goal. And so in that sense, I'm always trying to figure out, okay, you know, it's not enough what I've done so far. It's not enough to have raised a little bit of money for United Way and the Ottawa Hospital. How do I take that to another level? How can I change more people's lives? You know, I had a chance to meet, you know, as I mentioned, I've become involved in the refugee issue in Ottawa, the helping refugees, the challenges they face. And I met a guy named Jim Estill, who lives in southwestern Ontario. And he has personally sponsored something like 78 refugee families that have come to Canada. And he's done a bunch of other things to make their paths easier as well. And so I'm always thinking, you know, how can I do something more? How can I mobilize other people? You know, my thought process now is very much, you know, is around the idea that if I were the mayor of Ottawa, what would I do to fix problems in our community? And I'm not the mayor of Ottawa, and I probably never will be. So, but that doesn't mean I can't do those things that I would do if I were the mayor. And if I were a billionaire, what would I do to try to solve problems in our society? I'm not a billionaire, and I probably never will be. But that doesn't mean I can't do many of the things that I would set out to do if I were a billionaire. I just have to, you know, find other ways of funding those things, but I can still do those things. So I'm very much focused on what the next task is going to be in a lot of different areas.
That's great. Mark, this has been fantastic, as I think we probably expected it would be. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a great, great run with you. We appreciate all you've done for us too.
Yeah, it's been a great relationship. I've learned a lot from you guys, and I've enjoyed working with you and all the other people on the PWL team. It's great to be associated with your brand and to see you guys flourishing and growing. And I remember when you were on a different floor of this building in a much smaller office with a handful of people, and now to see so many people embracing what you do is, I'm very happy for you guys.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.